It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Starting this week, New Hampshire begins to get serious about the serious decline in our moose population. On August 1st, a four-year project kicks off examining why these majestic mammals have declined so dramatically. In just the past decade, Fish and Game estimates the Granite State's moose population has gone from more than 7,500 to about 4,500 today. The prime suspect is a warming climate, with impacts ranging from how high temperatures affect moose appetite to rising tick populations. The study will look at these and other problems through capturing and radio collaring moose over two winters. Then it'll be time to watch and wait to see how the moose fare, and when they do get sick or die, to find out why. From there, researchers hope to definitively say what's happening to these creatures and suggest short-term and long-term solutions. Today in The Exchange, the moose malaise and what this project hopes to find out. Let's hear from you. If you live in prime moose territory, have you noticed a decline in their numbers or not? What do you think moose mean to New Hampshire's culture and economy? And what, if anything, might this project do to help strengthen their numbers? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have two guests for the hour. Eric Orff is here, outreach consultant to the National Wildlife Federation and former Merrimack County, New Hampshire Fish and Game Commissioner. And Eric, nice to see you. Welcome back.
Good to be back, Laura.
Also with us, Christine Rhines, Moose Project Leader for the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department. And Christine, I know you're real busy these days with this project going, getting underway, so thank you for being here. Appreciate
it. Well, thank you for asking me.
Well, and Christine, let's start with you. So you've been tracking moose, following moose for a long time. What are you seeing out there?
Well, right now we have actually a stable population in our Connecticut Lakes region, furthest north where moose exist in the state. Also, primarily in the north region, they're doing fine. It's the White Mountains in the central region that we've seen a decline. And it's important that people understand that they were at their height in 1998, not 10 years ago. And the decline the last 7 years has been by about 15%. And the majority of that decline is being seen in the White Mountains and the central region, with smaller declines seen south of there and a decline in one of the units in the north region. So things aren't quite as bad as perhaps they're being made out to seem, but we certainly are seeing declines and we are concerned.
And declines not just in terms of the actual numbers, but from what I understand, Christine, and correct me if I'm wrong, the actual moose that you're seeing aren't as healthy. They're skinnier and sicker.
Well, certainly their weights are down, and that is perhaps the thing that we're most concerned about. So that's being seen across the boards, with the exception of the southern portion of the state. And in addition, reproduction is down as well due to the decline in weight.
When a female moose only weighs a certain amount of pounds, she'll only give birth to one calf, whereas normally they have twins?
No, but we know for a fact that our moose have to weigh 440 pounds in order to ovulate one egg. And our yearlings aren't always reaching that weight anymore. And an adult moose has to weigh 550 pounds in order to give birth to twins. They don't always give birth to twins, but that heightens that ability. So our adult moose aren't always reaching that weight. And it's important to know that is actually a carcass weight. So that's the weight of the animals once they've been eviscerated. So we're not seeing those carcass weights in our animals like we used to be. And that is causing our reproduction to decline.
What are you seeing out there, Eric Orff?
Well, of course, the moose is a majestic animal. And having worked in the past with Chris, working with moose is good duty as a wildlife biologist, I can tell you that. They are a fantastic animal. And I'm hearing from people in North Country and, you know, friends that are moose hunters or have been in the moose hunt in the past, or those just going driving north to observe moose. Hey, what's going on, Eric? We're seeing fewer moose. So the moose has become the poster child in New Hampshire for the National Wildlife Federation.
Why is that, Eric? I mean, seeing more decline and all that, and there's concern, but it isn't just the decline. It's that people love these creatures, right?
Absolutely. You know, we have whole industries in the North Country that depend on our moose to make a living. Basically, they're such an important economic tool for the North Country that, a loss in numbers is a concern for many of the people in the North Country. Absolutely. And those that go north or have camps north that live here in central and southern New Hampshire, but just enjoy the moose for being a moose.
Well, a couple of years ago, some cousins of mine from the Midwest came to visit, and yes, they went to Woodstock, and yes, they went on a moose tour, and yes, they saw 7 or 8 moose, and that bus was packed. They loved it, and it wasn't cheap either. So I hear what you say about the economic impact. You're talking about anecdotally talking to friends and so forth, Eric. The numbers Christine gives us sound concerning, but not overwhelming. What do you think?
Yeah, certainly moose are not gone, and you know, there are fewer numbers of moose. And as Chris said, there was a peak in population, which, you know, many animals do when they recover from low numbers. I mean, there were only 50 moose in the 1950s when I was born, and so, you know, moose shot up in numbers, and certainly, you know, some decline was to be expected. But as Chris said, the overall continued slide in various parts of the state is of great concern to not just hunters, but to the general population in New Hampshire.
All right. Well, let me invite our listeners to join us, and then we'll talk about why this may be happening. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the exchange, we're looking at a decline in moose populations in the Granite State, some of the trends that may be behind that, and a new study that's just getting underway about the moose decline. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. If you live in prime moose territory, what have you noticed in terms of the moose numbers? And what do you think moose mean to us here in New Hampshire? Eric Orff has touched on this. They're important for our economy. They're important for our culture. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And so let's get into the why, Christine, if we could. A lot of articles in the past year or two have said climate change is stressing the moose. Give us a little more on that, if you could.
Yes, we're not sure that it's actually heat-related, although moose are perfectly adapted to the cold. They really don't like the heat. And if it gets too warm in the summertime, some studies suggest that temperatures above 78 degrees, they'll stop eating and lie down. So that's not a good thing, but...
And then they won't reach those weights that you talked about that are important for them to reproduce.
Right, but whether that's actually happening or not in a natural environment, we simply don't know. But what we do know is that our shorter winters are allowing winter ticks, which are very different from the kind of ticks we typically get on ourselves, but it's allowing winter ticks to proliferate at a high rate. And more ticks get on moose when you have these little short winters. The ticks quest in the late fall, and so the later snow comes, the longer these ticks have to get on moose, the more ticks are on moose. You can have upwards of 120,000 to 160,000 ticks on an individual moose.
Wow, that's a lot of ticks.
That's
yikes.
A lot of ticks. Gives you real tick phobia. So those ticks start feeding in the late winter, early spring, and calves simply cannot tolerate that kind of blood loss. In fact, we've looked at the amount of blood the ticks can remove from moose, and some calves can lose up to all their blood volume, sometimes twice over, to this kind of feeding, and it causes them to die.
Right, they just can't handle it.
Right. So when we have these four shortened winters and that continues to happen, the ticks never get killed back and both weights reduce on the adults, we have increased mortality on the calves, and occasionally even mortality of the adults.
All right, let's take some calls if we could. Again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Ken's calling from Antrim. Hi, Ken, you're on the exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. I just was going to say about the tick pop problem. I hit our moose years ago, and when they found him, the guy stopped counting over at 1,000 ticks. The fish and game man, he just could not believe it. He was like, oh, my God. I mean, he just was flabbergasted.
So you hunted a moose a couple years back? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I hunted him. He hunted me. He ran into my car.
Oh, I see. Okay, and then fish and game came and took a look at the tick situation and was just overwhelmed by that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So the guy was speechless. He was like, oh, my God. I was, too. I was disgusted. I was like, oh, my God. I mean, how can they survive?
Right. Well, and that's what we were just talking about, so I'm glad you called, Ken. Eric, again, you know, ticks are normal for animals in the wild, but it reaches a threshold where they just can't hack it.
Exactly. And Laura, when I was tagging bears some years ago in the mid-'80s, I would go around during the week and pick up moose to use the carcasses to attract bears in order to trap them and tag them. And when you see one of these moose that the ticks are about raisin size, I would say, when they're engorged. And to see a moose literally paved with ticks was unbelievable to just witness that, to see how many tens of thousands can be on a moose. I mean, they were practically head to toe was just covered on some of these moose with ticks. It was a sight to be seen, not that you'd want to remember that.
Right.
But you can't help remember it because it was such an awful sight.
Well, and it's kind of gross to talk about for a morning call-in program, but, you know, I was not aware of winter ticks. You know, I just thought ticks were a problem in the warmer months.
Oh, no, there's all kinds of different ticks on different animals, and, you know, including our dog ticks. So there's a lot of different kind of ticks, and they have different life cycles that I'm sure Chris can tell you about the winter tick very much.
And so the winter tick is something that hangs out in the winter and isn't even killed off in the winter, but it's stronger because winter is warmer? Is that what's going on, Chris?
Well, no. What happens is these ticks will start when they fall off the moose and lay their eggs in the spring. If they fall off in the spring and they land on snow, they won't do very well. Typically, they die. They don't get to reproduce. But what's happening is that our snow leaves earlier. Even if we have tons of snow in the wintertime, it leaves earlier. So these ticks are falling off on dry ground, surviving. And then they actually start questing and getting on moose in the late fall. So they have already gotten on moose.
You've gotten a head start.
Right.
All right. Thanks for that call, Ken. And we'll take more of your calls after a short break. Keep it right here.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And you only have until this Saturday at noon for NHPR's summer car raffle. Don't miss out on your chance to win a kayak, a bike, or $25,000 toward a brand new car and help support NHPR at the same time. Go to NHPR.org to buy your raffle tickets or call 1-888-805-NHPR. Becoming partly sunny this afternoon, chance of showers and thunderstorms, especially for the North Country. Highs today, upper 70s to lower 80s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Huggins Hospital in Wolfboro, providing a continuum of health care to both year-round and summer residents of the Eastern Lakes region on the web at hugginshospital.org. And the Clean Bedroom Organic Mattress and Bedding Showroom in Kittery, Maine. Everything made from organic and sustainable materials, also on the web at thecleanbedroom.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the declining moose population in the Granite State and a new study just kicking off this week to look at why that's happening, what the state might do about it. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. If you've had encounters with moose, as our earlier caller did, tell us about that, what you've observed about these majestic creatures, and whether you think their numbers are in trouble or not. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Eric Orff and Christine Rhines, let's go right back to our callers. And Tom's calling from Rumney. Hi, Tom. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to find out why, if the moose population is declining, why Fish and Game is still running the moose lottery to hunt them, because I know they take out I don't know how many they take out each year, but I'm aware that that's a pretty annual normal thing in the state.
And do you think that they should stop hunting if the moose are in trouble, Tom, or not?
Well, I'm pro hunting. I'm just, you know, obviously if there's a problem, we need to, you know, conserve and dial that back, I would think, at the very least. Maybe not eliminate it altogether, but given that there's a problem, why are we not addressing it at that level so that we can stabilize the population in areas where there's problems?
Tom, thanks a lot for calling in. Christine, you want to jump on that, please?
Sure. He's absolutely correct. And in fact, we have been reducing permits. We've reduced them by almost two-thirds in the last, 7 years.
That's a big drop.
And at the same time, the moose population has only declined by about 15%. So we keep reducing the number of permits. We set the season biennially, and we're going to be setting the season this January or February. So we'll probably, if things have continued to decline, we'll reduce the permits again. So we are doing all we can, but I'm pretty sure the tail that's wagging this dog has nothing to do with moose permits, and it is, in fact, other mortality factors and primarily what we're seeing is winter tick.
What about a PR factor, if I could call it that, Eric Orff? You know, people may not realize that there's a limited amount of permits, that those permits have been going down dramatically. They just hear, you know, A, there's a problem with the moose population, we're worried about it, but B, we're still hunting. So public relations there.
Yeah, well, we still have, as Chris mentioned, 4,500 moose. So we have a good supply of moose, and certainly hunters you know, who spent some of them 30 or almost 30 years entering the lottery. So the whole lottery program is a big thing for the hunters in the state. And certainly hunting and fishing is still a big part of the culture and the economy in New Hampshire. And not that, you know, fishing game wouldn't stop the moose season, hunting season altogether if they thought it was necessary. And, you know, Chris and other biologists are looking at that every day. So we have well-trained conscientious staff that would certainly curb the season or stop the season if it really was necessary. So, you know, we have professionals that are doing a professional job. And, you know, knowing Chris, I rely on her expertise. She's doing a good job, and we want that to continue.
Making that assessment as to whether
Absolutely.
This is too much of a stress and strain.
Exactly.
You know, I want to go to another part of the country now where they actually have stopped moose hunting. Erica Butler is with us, wildlife veterinarian, lead investigator on the Adult Moose Mortality Project for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Erica Butler, great to have you. Thank you for your time.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, what's happening, first of all, with the moose populations in Minnesota?
Yeah, we've seen a pretty significant decline. Historically, we had two populations of moose. We had one in northwestern Minnesota that was about 4,000 animals, and then we had a northeastern Minnesota moose population that was about 8,000. And our northwest population disappeared in the 90s.
Disappeared?
About 10. Disappeared. We have less than 100 left.
Wow. From
so
how many?
4,000. 4,000 to less than 100.
Wow.
And our northeast herd now is about 8,000 animals, and it looks like it was 8,000. We're down to less than 3,000, and our projections say by 2020 they could be gone.
Wow. Wow. 2020 is not that far away, Erica.
Nope. Pretty went up quick.
Well, officials here are saying it's largely, they believe, due to climate change, you know, high temperatures, meaning some moose won't eat when it gets too hot. And then, of course, the big, big tick problem that you see with shorter winters. What are people saying there in Minnesota is the cause?
You know, we're not sure. That's what part of the main objective of our study is, to find out what's killing them. We believe it's health related. We did have some winter ticks in the spring, but they weren't an unusual high number of them. We're having animals die, you know, during seasons when they shouldn't be. You know, traditionally, moose die in the spring when they're really stressed. They have winter ticks, and the wolves can take them out easier. But we're seeing animals die every month of the year. We're seeing young animals die. We're seeing them just fall over dead. It's pretty unusual. So we're looking into any of the health issues that we can, like viruses and parasites and everything.
Well, so give us a little bit more on that. If not climate change, then what?
You know, I don't think it definitely could be linked, an indirect link with climate change. You know, we're seeing different parasites out there. We're seeing different vector things like mosquitoes, that sort of stuff. So it could be an indirect link to climate change, but we have every reason to believe it's health-related, just because of all the different ways, you know, things we're seeing when they're dying and how they're dying.
Yeah, and pretty disturbing. You're seeing them die at times and in ways that you're not used to seeing. That's pretty upsetting. I wonder how the state has responded.
Yeah, we're definitely taking it very seriously. This is a pretty aggressive study, state-of-the-art, first of its kind. The technology we're using is phenomenal. It's definitely being taken seriously.
And from what I understand, you've canceled your moose hunt temporarily. Is that right?
Yep, they canceled it this year after we had a 35% decline in 1 year in our annual survey and a 55% decline in 2 years in our population.
What was the reaction, Erica, there when you canceled the moose hunt?
I think a lot of people were glad that we did it.
Really?
It was definitely, yeah, socially, they were very pleased with that.
So what's the, in the short term, you're canceling the hunt and, you know, taking some time out while you study this. What about the long term, Erica? What are your thoughts about what the state of Minnesota might do?
You know, it depends on what we find to be the cause of the decline. There are some things that if they were, you know, if that were the case, there could be some management implications for us. You know, if we find it's brainworm and liver fluke, we could do some deer management, also some habitat management to get rid of the snails that transmit these diseases, that sort of thing.
Okay. Erica, real interesting. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
Erica Butler, wildlife veterinarian, lead investigator on the Adult Moose Mortality Project for the Minnesota Department of Resources, where, as she told us, it's gotten so bad they've canceled the moose hunt. And before we go back to our listeners, I did want to get thoughts from you, Eric, or from Christine Rhines. Christine, you first. So she's saying, maybe climate change, maybe not. There's a lot of other stuff going on, different parasites, brainworm, maybe some snail problems that could be fixed with habitat management. What do you think?
Well, like I said, we have no clear evidence that warmer temperatures are causing moose to die. There's not a direct relationship there, but they are certainly reducing our winter lengths, and that is giving winter tick a big boost. And we know based on our previous mortality study that winter tick is causing the bulk of our mortality in our moose population. So we're not seeing the dramatic declines that Minnesota is, but we do know that we're probably, our mortality rate has increased over the intervening years since our last mortality study. So we want to know what else might be causing our moose to die. Is it winter tick? Are we starting to see problems with other parasites and viruses, and what might be causing those to increase? That's what we're hoping to find out in this study.
What do you think, Eric, about what we heard from Eric Butler in Minnesota?
Well, certainly, you know, the underlying factor could very well be a warming world, as she insinuated as well. So, you know, as Chris said, it's not necessarily a direct link, but when you have a warming world, I mean, diseases tend to spike. And certainly, you know, shorter winters, and we've all seen that. I mean, I'm, you know, old enough to remember when, as the old timers say, when winters were real, and now they're not so real. And I think we're seeing the evidence of that with the uptick in you know, the dramatic increase in tick numbers. So, you know, when you talk, even talking to hunters and fishermen, they don't necessarily, many of them don't believe in climate change, but you say, well, but I remember, you know, I used to go ice fishing, you know, by Christmas. And now, you know, it's late January before I'm ice fishing. So they don't necessarily connect the dots either. And the dots are difficult to collect at times. But, you know, intuitively, we all seem to know things are changing. And climate certainly is a big part of that.
The phone number for you to join us with your questions, comments, thoughts on this is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Here's an email that just came in from Nancy, and Eric, maybe you can talk about this. She says, can your guests comment on the feasibility of putting some sort of flea and tick collar or tag on the moose? Works for dogs and cats. Any way to do it on a wild animal? Wouldn't it at least lessen the number of ticks on the animal? What do you think? If you guys are going to collar and tag these animals anyway, why not put a flea collar on them? It's a great question, Nancy. Thank you. Any Eric, you want to go first, or Kristen?
Well, I think both of us could chime in here because we both have tagged moose in the past, back in the 80s when New Hampshire had its first tagging program. It's so labor-intensive, and some moose die. You tranquilize moose, and a certain percentage are going to die just from the stress of being tranquilized. And that was back probably when they were healthier than they are now. So some will die. very, very expensive. We're talking about the next 2-year study or 3-year study of, you know, $750,000 to look at the current problem. So very expensive to actually catch enough moose to make a difference would be, I think, just cost prohibitive. It's just no one has that kind of money.
And Christine, what do you think? And if you could, in answering that question, also add on to the concern that some moose die. I think they found this out in Minnesota. When you do catch them and tag them, some moose just die from the stress of that.
Right. And that's true with any capture study. You want to see less than 10% of those animals die from the stress. And we've always been successful at keeping it considerably lower than that or at that level. And the amount of information you gather from the animals that survive is so important to being able to manage them that it's just a fact of life. You're going to lose some of those animals due to the stress. But
what do you think about Nancy's question? If you're going to collar them anyway, put a flea collar on them.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be great if it were that simple? But in fact, you'd have to go out and put flea and tick product on every single animal once a month in order to make that work, just like we do with our dogs or even horses. Simply not feasible, cost millions and millions and millions of dollars. I'm pretty sure no one's going to let us spend that kind of money or even come up with that money.
Well, Nancy, thanks for the email. And our phone number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. I want to bring another voice into our conversation, someone who's been tracking and hunting moose for many years. John Lanier is with us. He's from Columbia. John, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Laura. Happy to be on.
Well, as I understand, you've been observing moose since the 1970s. Wow. What have you seen lately, John, in terms of the moose?
Well, obviously numbers are down from where they were 15 or 20 years ago. Lord only knows what the reasons are. I think the studies that Chris is talking about may help us understand what the reasons are. But the numbers are definitely down.
How much longer does it take you to find a moose these days versus, I don't know, John, 10 years ago?
Well, I go by, I travel around a lot. And 10 years ago, it wasn't uncommon to see a moose every time you more or less were on the road in the North Country in the evening. And now it's one time out of 10, maybe you'd see a moose.
Yeah, more and more of a rare event.
Go ahead. Yeah, the numbers are lower, for sure.
Do you think that it's all about die-off, John, or do you think that they are, and you know obviously a lot more about this than I do, that they're just moving in ways that we don't understand, and maybe we just don't see them as much by the road as we used to, but they're still there?
There's like I said, there's probably a number of factors, but I think that's partially what's going on, is that the amount of cutting, timber cutting, logging, that was going on 15 or 20 years ago was much more extensive than it is now in terms of clear cutting. And a clear cut that's 3 to 5 years old is moose food. And a lot of that was going on near roads and that sort of thing. And the amount of clear cutting has declined, and the cutting that had taken place near the roads, of course, has grown up. So the moose have shifted locations to some degree in the other cuts. And so I was mentioning Moose Alley in Pittsburgh, where people used to go and expect to see moose every time they went in the evening. And now when people go, they hardly ever see moose, but the habitat conditions have changed. And, of course, all the other factors that are going on that Chris has talked about in the winter tick and the warmer winters and everything else is definitely, my belief anyhow, has affected the moose population.
Yeah, about 15 years ago, John, I saw some moose on Moose Alley. I was on my bicycle too, so that was that was an interesting experience. But I appreciate what you're saying about habitat conditions, and I am going to ask Christine about that. Another question for you, though, John, from a hunter's perspective, what's the talk among hunters about possible reductions, further reductions in moose lottery numbers?
Well, you know, there's it always comes up in a conversation when, you know, if, run into somebody who just got drawn for a moose permit or somebody who just did, and they're talking about the number of permits going down, and you know, they're all talking about the rumors that if things keep going the way they're going, the moose season's going to be closed and so on. And there's concern about that, obviously, but and there's also understanding about it, in my opinion. You know, there's at least sort of a positive attitude that something's being done about it, rather than just let the moose herd go down the tubes.
Is there a fear that New Hampshire might go as far as Minnesota and just cancel the hunt, as we just heard that they've done?
I haven't heard that fear yet. I've heard people talk about there's a possibility that down the road a piece, the moose season might be closed if things keep going the way they're going. And it you know, the feeling that I get from people who are making that comment is that they're sort of resigned to it. You know, that they know the population's down, and you know, at some point something's going to have to be done about that. And of course, the reduction in permit numbers is one of the things that has been done about it.
Well, John, it's good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Laura.
John Lanier, he's a hunter from Columbia, New Hampshire. He's been observing moose for more than 40 years. And real quickly, before we go to the break, Christine, I thought it was real interesting, John's comments about partly, yes, it's because the numbers are going down, but partly it's changes in how we cut timber and in habitat. And so maybe you don't see them on Moose Alley anymore like I did 15 years ago, but maybe it's just because they're not hanging out by the road anymore.
That's exactly right. And in some things are different depending on which region of the state you're in. And in that Connecticut Lakes region, especially along Pittsburgh, Moose Alley, those clear cuts that used to really draw moose into the side of the road have grown up. DOT actually came to us and said, how can we reduce the number of moose coming to the sides of the roads?
Because people were colliding with them.
Right, and we don't want that to happen. And so we suggested to them, you need to stop using salt, use something else to eliminate the ice on the roads, and then drain those wet, damp areas on the side of the road that are collecting salt and bringing moose to the road.
Salty moose muck. They
right.
love that.
They do. And so DOT did that, and it dramatically reduced moose coming out to the side of the road. So it's not a very clear-cut picture in every... It's not one smoking gun.
All right, again, which is why we're doing this giant study. We will take a lot more of your calls after a short break. Keep it right here.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning.
NHPR is part of your summer, whether we're helping you discover places to go and things to do around the Granite State, or keeping you in touch with the country and the world on your schedule. I'm Laura Kanoy. NHPR's Summer Car Raffle is a great way to support this extraordinary service, help us cover the expenses of bringing it to you, and have a shot at winning some exciting prizes. Call us today for your raffle tickets, 1-888-805-NHPR, or visit nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and Mascoma Savings Bank, serving the people and needs of the Upper Connecticut River Valley since 1899, online at mascomabank.com. And New Hampshire's Hospital for Children, now offering pediatric neurology, gastroenterology, nephrology, pulmonary medicine, and integrative medicine. NHHospitalForChildren.org. It's 940. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we'll look at what the new medical marijuana law means for New Hampshire. Email us your questions before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the decline of New Hampshire's moose population and a new state project tracking what may be behind it. Join us with your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Our guests in studio are Eric Orff, outreach consultant to the National Wildlife Federation and former Merrimack County County, New Hampshire Fish and Game Commissioner. Christine Rhines is here, Moose Project Leader for the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department. And both of you, lots and lots of people who want to jump in on our conversation. So let's go next to Mike in Goffstown. Hi, Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Laura. Interesting program. Obvious question. If winter ticks are the problem, why are they not impacting the bear population and the deer population to the same extent they are the moose population, or are they? Perhaps you could elaborate on that a little.
You know, Mike, I had that same question myself. Eric Orff, the deer seem to be doing fine.
Yeah, and actually I just heard Chris talk a week ago or less than a week ago about this very thing. But deer groom themselves. You know, they, as she put it, well, hey, look, there's some ticks on me. I'll get rid of them. For some reason, deer groom themselves and
kind of like
allow,
cats groom themselves.
Yeah, and don't allow the ticks. And it's probably the same with bear. I actually have never seen any numbers of ticks. I've handled many bears as the former bear biologist, though I've never really seen numbers of ticks on bears either. They apparently are much more fastidious than our lovely majestic moose, which seem to not mind 130,000 ticks for some reason.
Yeah, or at least mind enough, and yeah, and then they succumb to them. Do you want to jump in on that, too? It's a great question, Mike asks.
Yeah, it is a marvelous question, and it's primarily because moose did not evolve with ticks. Deer did, and so deer are what we call obligate groomers. They immediately groom the ticks off when they feel them. They may leave a couple on, but they pretty much get rid of the bulk of them. Moose, because they did not evolve with the ticks, don't see them as an issue, let them stay on, and then, unfortunately, because they're not very fastidious, they die from the resultant numbers of ticks.
Okay. Well, Mike, again, great question, one I had myself, so thank you for joining us. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You know, a couple minutes ago, we heard from Erica Butler in Minnesota, where they've canceled the moose hunt, where their moose numbers are way, way, way down. We're going to go now to our neighbors in Maine and talk to Lee Cantar, Maine's Moose Project Leader. And Lee, good morning. And from what I hear, you're not that worried about the moose in Maine. What's happening there in terms of your moose population?
Hey, good morning. Good morning to Chris and good morning, Eric.
Hey, Lee.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far. I would say that we're cautiously optimistic. In Maine, we have a little bit different compared to New Hampshire as far as scale geographically. You know, our best moose habitat, which really drives our statewide population numbers, is latitudinally north of even Coos County in New Hampshire. So it's a different dynamic up there. We have millions of acres of commercial forest land that's on short rotation, so we have a lot of excellent habitat up there. But certainly down towards the New Hampshire border and what we would call more central Maine, certainly winter tick and lungworm, which is another parasite, is a concern for us, especially with our moose calves.
So you are seeing some problems in central Maine, if I could put it that way, Lee.
Well, yeah, in the western mountains, right next to Coos County, and certainly like New Hampshire experience in 2011, it appeared that there was a increase, a die-off of moose that was more than we've seen in other years. We did not have a way to quantify those losses compared to other years, but some of the evidence out there in the landscape suggested that that was a particularly bad year, especially for calves.
You mentioned the ticks, and we've talked a lot about that this morning. You also mentioned another factor, lungworm. Did I hear you right, Lee?
Yeah, we get all kinds of nasty worm-type parasites that moose seem to take the brunt of, and of course our buddies, the white-tailed deer, seem to not be bothered as much by. But what we've discovered over quite a long period of time, especially in young calves there, that when we open them up and do a necropsy with these ones that have died over winter in the springtime, that when we examine their lungs, a lot of them have this lungworm that's associated with that as well, which of course is another serious drain on that animal.
As you see trouble in nearby states, and as you experience a little bit of that trouble yourself, Lee, are there preventative measures you can take so you don't meet the fate of Minnesota, for example, or are you just kind of crossing your fingers?
Well, I mean, certainly monitoring is key in trying to understand the relative input every year of different mortality factors, and that's obviously going to have some impact on how much allowable harvest you have when you're when you're doing your permit allocations. You know, and I didn't hear your show earlier. I'm sure Chris talked about it a little bit, but you talked to the gurus out west on winter tick, and, you know, as far as trying to put a damper on winter ticks across such a big landscape with animals that travel far and wide, you know, that's a very difficult situation to try to figure out if you're really talking about trying to manage winter tick. I mean, that's quite a big task, but, you know, nobody's willing to throw their arms up either. We're trying to gather more information, trying to understand the dynamic. And certainly it's not just one thing that affects a decline or decrease in the moose population. It's multiple things. And, you know, fortunately, we have a lot of, we have a tough winter in the northern part of the state, like I said, and that longer period of winter with more snow on the ground for a longer period of time, you know, may be one of the key ingredients here in keeping our winter ticks
okay.
in check in the far north.
Well, Lee, thank you, and good luck with the moose.
Thank you.
That's Lee Kantar. Again, he's Maine's Moose Project Leader and talking about what's been happening with the moose there in the Pine Tree State. Let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. And Christine, real quickly, he mentioned lungworm. We talked about brainworm earlier, other parasites. What do you think? So it's not just climate change and the ticks. There's other things going on there as well, it sounds like.
But there are numerous parasites that we have seen in a previous mortality study. We did see some lungworm in our animals. We did see what is called tipping over disease. They actually don't even know what it is or what causes it. But perfectly healthy moose just literally seem to tip over and die. There's, you know, a number of factors that cause moose to die naturally. It doesn't have anything to do with any kind of warming conditions or shorter winters. But when you add everything together and then you add shorter winters and increased winter tick mortality, possible increased lungworm, increased diseases that we hadn't always seen because we had severe winters, and it caused these diseases to be stopped in their tracks. All this stuff adds up over a
period
of time.
It's like a piling on effect.
That's right. It's the piling on effect. I like that.
You know what I wonder too, Eric Orff, you know, as the deer seem to be doing pretty well, they've got some natural abilities to ward off certain diseases, as we talked about before, and the moose struggle. Does it reach a point, Eric, where there's competition for food and the moose are sort of weak and struggling so they don't get as much?
You can see Chris is shaking her head, and there's been some studies that Chris has been involved with. It's certainly not the case. But if you look at New Hampshire, you know, when I started at, when I was formerly worked at Fish and Game, when I started there in the 70s, we had about 40,000 deer in New Hampshire. Now I think the estimate is about 85,000 deer in New Hampshire.
Wow, twice as
so
much.
So twice as many deer. Certainly the hunter's take is up significantly to over 10,000 most years. So, you know, this certainly is another driving factor that we have more deer. But if you, you know, ask Chris, well, you know, are there so many deer that the brainworm, a disease, again, that the deer seem to do fine with but is fatal to moose, but the brainworm factor has not seemed to skyrocket despite the fact that we have a significantly bigger deer population. So, you know, the food issue really isn't an issue, but other issues with deer and moose are issues.
Okay. Well, let's take some more calls. And Bill is up from Concord. Hi, Bill. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning. Actually, I'm from Kentuckook. I had a question and a comment. My question was, some 30 years ago, I shot a deer in Indiana. And it was so warm that day that we put the deer inside the station wagon and turned on the air conditioner to get it back to Chicago. And were horrified about an hour later when about 300 ticks were coming over the back seat to get us in the front seat.
Oh, my goodness.
And I just wondered if we had inquired in any of the fish and game departments in the states where ticks were prevalent long before they were in New Hampshire.
Yikes, another reason to put it on the roof, right?
How the herd survived. And my comment might be to a Chris that I met some years ago in 1987. I checked in at Twin Mountain, the first legal moose that was shot in New Hampshire in 100 years, and was picketed and got hate mail from across the country. But I was encouraged that I think that year the moose herd was at 3,000, and when it got up to somewhere near 5,000, that was very encouraging for us. And now I'm really distressed that the herd is losing its members. So Bill,
if I could just make sure I got you right. So when the moose hunt was reintroduced in New Hampshire, when was that, please?
I think it was 87.
Okay.
Chris probably knows for sure, but I believe that was the year.
And you got the first permit to hunt moose?
And I was in the first hunt.
Yeah.
And I think I actually shot the second moose of the day, but I had arranged for a logging truck to put the moose in the body of a pickup truck. And we checked out at 5 o'clock or thereabouts in Twin Mountain that first hunting day. And we were the first moose to bring in a legal animal and have it checked out in, what, some 97 years or something like that.
Well, given your long history with this, Bill, how do you feel about the possibility of the permits being drawn down yet again due to these concerns over the health of the moose population?
No question in my mind that it's very important to protect the herd, and I would certainly recommend going without hunting the moose for as many years as it takes to contribute back to a healthy herd again.
All right. Bill, thank you very much for calling. Good to hear your stories about that. Again, given how long he's been involved in this. Did you want to jump in, Eric, real quick?
I just wanted to say I checked Bill's moose in.
Oh, really? Okay, so you've been doing this a long time, too.
Yes, I have.
And when was that moose hunt reinstated?
1988.
Okay, so what was the reason, Chris, before for not hunting moose?
Well, when the state was first settled by European colonists, there was no fish and game department, and they literally hunted moose virtually to extinction. They used them both for meat and clothing, and then market hunters hunted them very heavily and sold the meat and the tongues and the moose noses to restaurants in Boston and New York. And because there was no fish and game department, there were no rules and regulations, they virtually hunted them to extinction. So that was stopped when a fish and game department was formed, and we didn't hunt them until they made a strong comeback. And the first hunt was in 1988.
All right. Well, and thanks a lot for calling in, Bill, and lots of people who've called in. I've got some emails, too, that I'd love to go through with you as well. This is from Doug in Concord. He says, can the guests comment on how results of their study would influence decisions on habitat management and how changes in moose habitat and populations tell us something about other New Hampshire wildlife species? Maybe, Eric Gorf, I'll give you the second part of that question. How changes in moose habitat and populations tell us something about other New Hampshire wildlife species?
Well, other wildlife species that are seen to be impacted by potentially climate change. Well, for instance, almost a decade ago now, the New Hampshire duck hunters, typically we had a inland season and a coastal season. Well, the coastal season was generally the month of December. Well, about a decade ago, just before I retired from fishing game, the duck hunters at the annual hearing said, listen, there aren't ducks on Great Bay in December like there used to be. Can we move the season to January? So here again, the hunters connected changes in the environment to needing to move the duck season into January to get the later migrating birds. So, you know, hunters are seeing the same thing with the woodcock season. Hunters have asked to move the woodcock season into November. Traditionally, it was the month of October. So, we're shifting seasons to because the hunters are asking for. And then most recently, the shrimp population off the coast of New Hampshire was zeroed out this last year. The Gulf of Maine has warmed some 4%. Shrimp fishermen used to make $5 million catching shrimp off New Hampshire's coast. This last year, it was a bust. There were no shrimp because the Gulf of Maine warmed up so much that the shrimp are no longer reproducing. So it's not just moose that we're talking about. There's a whole host of species. In fact, some of the birds are being impacted as well. Our state songbird, the purple finch, has gone down 50% in the last decade.
Well, and Doug's other question, how the results of your study, Chris, will influence decisions on habitat management. And that, of course, includes, you know, how many permits, but also issues like tree cutting and so forth.
Yeah, the study is not looking at habitat per se. This study is primarily to determine why moose are dying. But we do know that habitat is important in tick transmission, because if you have large acreages of mature forest and just have little tiny places where there is regrowth, where moose eat, then you're going to concentrate all those moose there, and it's going to make it easier for them to pick up ticks. So it is important in the face of that to have a diverse array of mature and regrowing areas so that moose can go in many different directions to get food and also still have protection from the sun and heat in the way of mature forests. And that diversity of forest stands is also important for the majority of our wildlife species in the state. So it's important that we have cutting, but that it be distributed across the landscape in ways that it makes it easy for animals to reach both mature forest and regrowing forest.
That's interesting. Gets back to John Lanier's point about the changes that we've seen in cutting and how that's affecting wildlife populations. What's the first step, Chris, as this project gets underway?
Well, the first step is we have to have a graduate student, and I believe Professor Peter Pekins, who's going to be in charge of the study through UNH, has already got a student on board, and after that, we have to now immediately get a capture company to capture the moose, and we hope to get someone from out west, which is where the capture companies usually come from.
And is there a way for the public to keep track of this? Because given the interest during this show, I would think a lot of people would be interested in just keeping up with how it's going.
Sure. We hope to be able to have some updates on our own website. So you can go to the New Hampshire Fish and Game website, and I hope Eric knows what that is, because I don't.
Just Google Fish and Game. It's there actually are more than one website. There's the Hunt New Hampshire, Fish New Hampshire. There's several different Fish and Game websites, but they're readily accessible.
All right, and Eric, maybe we'll put some of those on our website, nhpr.org. Make it a little easier for folks to get to
good
that.
Idea.
I want to thank both of you very much for coming in. Real interesting stuff. Eric, it was good to see you. Thank you for being
thank
here.
You,
Eric Orff, Outreach Consultant for the National Wildlife Federation. Christine Rhines, thank you also for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Christine Rhines, Moose Project Leader for the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Tim Camerato. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org. The eponymous prize in NHPR's summer car raffle is, in fact, a brand new car of your choice. If you're our grand prize winner, you can choose from any car from Grapponi Automotive Group's dealerships, Ford, Honda, Toyota, Scion, Mazda, or Hyundai. Support the station you love and the news you rely on, and get in on the raffle. Tickets are just $50 each or 3 for $100 at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-NHPR today.
The Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 here on NHPR.